Extracts from The Mothership Chronicles A Wide World of Hope and Joy of Jane Egan. Disclaimer: this book is a gathering together of my real-life adventures. It could even be called a documentary. It is not a work of fiction. It is not an imitation of Star Trek and other TV series. No information in this book has come from any person who has had access to military classified information now or in the past. I have no physical evidence to put before you. You must understand this from the start. Thus, there is nothing that is now in my possession that can be stolen from me in order to discredit me by saying that I have no evidence. Unfortunately, this has happened to other writers who have had ET type artifacts they brought back from their own experiences with ETs. I have only my adventures to offer. I have heard of some negative experiences that the mothership and some of its inhabitants have endured at the hands of humanity on Earth. Their presence here is considered highly secret. However, I was not privy to any first-hand knowledge of these situations. Therefore, this kind of information must be considered hearsay. I have decided not to include any such hearsay in the book. Because I would not be able to verify it personally, I did not believe it would be fair to you as the reader to include it here. If you find that the tales of these adventures are too far out to allow into your belief system, then you may simply view them as entertaining stories. On the other hand, it is my earnest hope that they give you something to add to an open mind. Chapter 1. Arrival in the Mothership. You go up to a mothership in your nighttime travels. "Where is this mothership?" I asked incredulously. "Come on outside and I'll show you. You can see it best right around midnight." This young lady was part Navajo and at times she seemed wise beyond her years. She was pointing straight up overhead. "What do you think that is?" There was a bright light directly above my head. I had to strain my neck to see it. I was trying to place it into one of the constellations, but it didn't seem to fit. I thought back to my high school physics class about the difference between stars and planets. I learned that planets are brighter than stars because they are closer to the Earth. Stars are fainter, but they twinkle because they are so far away. But this light was directly overhead was too bright to be a star, but it was twinkling, sort of. It was blinking very slowly. "That is the mothership that I go up to. The commander is called Edros," she said triumphantly. "When I am up in the mothership, they call me Aurora." Then we went back inside and she gave me instructions as to how to train my mind to hold my consciousness right at the edge of sleep, to think about going straight up, and that I want to bring my memory back afterwards. This would be called conscious astral travel. I tried very hard to follow her instructions for several evenings, but it seemed to require a delicate balance between relaxation and trying to project myself up and out of my body lying on the bed. I wanted to remember where I would go on my journey out of the body. Suddenly I was aware of being in a narrow room between two rows of strange equipment. It was stacked compactly in as little space as possible. It was all odd shapes and was silvery in color. A man burst into the room and almost crashed into me. He appeared to about 35 years old and was wearing a close-fitting silvery jumpsuit. Over it he wore a sleeveless tunic of the same material, which hit him at mid-thigh. The tunic had side ties at his waist. He spoke emphatically in a strange language. I know some Spanish, German and Italian, but it wasn't one of these. The words had triple consonants. I knew it was a question because of the rising inflection at the end of the sentence. All I could do was look at him blankly. Then I heard, "Hello. Where did you come from? How did you get in here?" I just raised my arms and shook my head in puzzlement. I was staring at him, my mouth hanging open. As soon as I realized this, I shut it quickly. This seemed to amuse him. The thought came into my mind, "Are you from Earth, from Terra?" My eyes widened, I couldn't speak, but I nodded my head. Grateful at last to come up with some kind of an answer. "Yes, I'm from Earth, of course I am. But then if I am from Earth, then where am I now and how did I get here?" I thought. He was even more amused. "Well, you're here and that's all that matters. I don't know how you got here either. This is a mothership from the Pleiadian fleets and we are high above your Earth. I am Jaimeni. What's your name?" I couldn't understand the name of the ship nor his name, for they were in that strange unfamiliar language. I was thinking that my name would probably sound just as strange to him. True, but here your name is known as Kartriya, and that is what I shall call you. He had a twinkle in his eye. You have begun this visit of yours in one of our great supply rooms full of parts for this mothership. He began pointing out various pieces of gear and explaining them. But I understood none of it. Seeing that I was puzzled, he stopped. Now, just come with me, he commanded, walking over to a wall. A door opened in front of him, splitting in the middle, with the halves sliding into the wall. The doorway was oval-shaped. At first I had thought it was just part of the decoration. This next room was much larger. There were three people working at curved consoles and screens. They were handsome people, tall and slim, with lightly tanned skin. They looked like they might be Scandinavian. Look what I found. Jaimini seemed delighted. Two men with blonde hair who were dressed like Jaimini in silvery jumpsuits and tunics turned to look at us. The woman wore a long flowing skirt of the same material. She had long brown hair held back out of the way of her work. She was writing data on a clipboard like UPS uses. My new friend turned and waved toward me. She is from Terra and her name is Kartriya. As we came forward they all broke out in smiles. I smiled back hesitantly, thinking I'd like to have skirt like the woman had. Immediately the woman's smile widened. There were two consoles curved around so they could reach all parts of the equipment easily from the two seats in front of them. Very efficient. For a fleeting moment I thought of scenes from the TV productions of Star Trek. You are quite right on that. Now where do you suppose they got the idea for that? Grinned one of the men in front of the console. Then the full realization hit me. Communication had been totally by mental telepathy. We were wondering when you would stumble to that. Jaimini laughed with delight. It makes for great communications, and it only takes half the energy. We are always looking for ways to conserve energy on this mothership. The man at the console turned and gestured at a black panel above the console. You can even see Terra out the window from here. Want a peek? He began turning some control knobs. Jaimini let out a torrent of words I couldn't understand and shook his head. You can look at that later. Come on. We've got other things to see. Then he was off and running. We all followed him. Look what I found. Jaimini was acting as if I was a treasure of great value. I went to the supply room and one minute there was nobody there, and the next minute there she was. Her name is Kartriya and she is from Terra. We were now in a repair facility where men and women were working with great delicacy on strange equipment. Several people looked up in puzzlement. From Terra? Said one of the men. That's right, she is from Terra, not our era, said Jaimini firmly. The puzzlement on their faces turned to smiles of welcome. I nodded in acknowledgement. I looked at the equipment they were working on. There were no nuts, bolts or screws on their work tables. The equipment fitted neatly together without visible means of attachment. Some people conversed in low tones in that strange language. Look here. Everybody, I want you to meet our new guest. She is a surprise visitor from Terra. I found her in one of our supply rooms. The thought boomed out through the room. Her name is Kartriya and she doesn't know how she got here onto our mothership and neither do I. But let's make her welcome. Jaimini was delighted. He was having the time of his life. Smiles of welcome blossomed over all their faces. I even heard a hint of laughter. What a good-looking lot they all were. I couldn't be afraid of them. They were mostly tall and slender. One or two were of a sturdier build but all wore the same garb as Jaimini, apparently a universal work uniform. They walked on light feet carrying their heads high. They had long hair, both the men and women, well swept back from their faces, and held with a clip. Some wore large earrings of bi-light turquoise. Their eyes were shades of blue or green. Some even had gold-colored eyes. My curiosity was growing about these people and the place. What did they all do? Questions raced through my mind. Wait a minute, one at a time. Jaimini laughed and held up his hand. I think it's time to take you to see our commander. He turned to the group, giving a grand wave to summon them all. Come on everybody. Let's go. This is official. Most of them set their work down and followed us. Suddenly I laughed. We looked like something right out of the fairy tale, the boy with the golden goose. Everywhere that the boy had walked, he picked up people along the way. They all had to travel right along behind him, all hanging onto the golden goose. We had almost as much of a following now ourselves. This idea rippled back through the group and people were bubbling over with laughter. We entered a long narrow room with indirect lighting. It had a large marble table in the center with chairs grouped around it, obviously a conference room. Again I heard that strange language. In a moment, the tallest man I had ever seen came into the room. He was well over 7 feet tall and had a commanding presence. His prominent eyes looked as if they could see into your very soul. The tunic he wore was much longer than the others and had embroidery in bright colors around the neck. "Sir, I found this earthling, this charming resident from Terra, in one of our supply rooms. None of us knows exactly how she got here, but her name is Kartriya." A wonderful smile spread across the face of the commander. "Yes, of course. I already know Kartriya." I was amazed to hear his words spoken aloud, and in English at that. His eyes twinkled just a bit. "I am Adros, commander of this starship. I have been watching you for some time now as you and your friend, Aurora, have gone your way upon the Earth." I gasped. "Sir, Commander Adros, I am very pleased to meet you. I have heard many wonderful things about you from my friend, Aurora, down on Earth. Who knows of you?" I gulped. "P5, I said my very first words aloud since coming aboard the starship. A murmur among the onlookers indicated that they also understood. "She really does have a voice." There were others in the back of the room besides Commander Adros. They were very tall and wore dark full-length robes. Some of them had hoods pulled over their faces, and stood well back out of the light. I wondered if I had broken up a conference that Adros was having. That might not have been such a good idea. "The conference can wait. Right now we will celebrate your arrival on board ship. You must try to remember the method you used to get up here so you can come again and often." Adros was smiling at me. Then a most surprising sight came into view. My Earthside friend, who said she was called Aurora, floated into view. She was lying on her side and wearing 3 hawk feathers at an angle on the back of her head. "I knew you could do it," she said smiling. I was even more startled to see her here, but there was little time to talk. There was a buzz of excitement, a party atmosphere. I found a feeling of genuine welcome. Here I had just burst in unnoticed and I had been made to feel like an honored guest, quite amazing. The celebration began. From out of somewhere came some chocolates that were passed around. I was beset with questions. How did I manage to find my way here? How had I succeeded when so many other Earthlings never even came close, or even wanted to come for a visit? "Well, my young friend who visits here told me how to focus thought, so my astral travels would be more purposeful. I think I saw her here a moment ago. It took a bit of practice, but here I am." There was a murmur of approval. "And what sort of metaphysical topics have you studied?" asked one of the beings in a diplomatic robe. He was very dignified and I knew he wanted a straight answer. No hedging would be acceptable here. I gulped. "Well, sir, I have been studying metaphysics for about 20 years. First I began reading about the Master Saint Germain and now I read several metaphysical magazines, which have information from El Moya, Commander Soltec and Lord Sananda, and several other masters. I have met Master Hilarion myself. In the metaphysical church I go to, they teach about reincarnation and receiving messages from the other side of life. I even remember some of my own past lives," I replied. "Very good. Your education is well begun. But you have much more study ahead of you, much more." I stepped back in surprise. Eek! I heard a high-pitched squeal near my feet. I looked down and saw that I was wearing a full-length skirt just like the one I had admired. Around my feet there was a purple mass that squirmed. It was furry with beautiful color jewels on its back. Soon it flowed apart from around my foot, moved forward and then flowed right back together again. It looked for all the world like a little purple Pekingese dog. It wriggled away from me as fast as it could. She stepped on the ambassador of the Xantarians. I heard someone gasp. There were more of the little purple things near my ankles, ambling away as fast as their little purple legs could carry them. I guess I hadn't hurt the little thing very much, for he had simply flowed back together out in front of me. Don't worry about him. The ambassador is a fourth dimensional being, so you couldn't really hurt him. I flipped out and came back onto my bed with a slight bounce. I was just coming back fully into my physical body. My head was in a whirl and I had a bit of a headache because I had come back into my body too fast and the process had been uneven. A whole new universe was out there somewhere in space. From Earth we could only dimly comprehend that it was there. It was fear and only fear that had precipitated my unceremonious exit from the mothership. I really hoped I would be allowed to go back for a visit on another night. If I would be allowed to return, this could turn out to be an interesting adventure. Chapter 2. A dozen hearts repaired. I was bursting with this great big secret, but I couldn't tell anyone. Only 2 nights before, I had been on a giant mothership stationed somewhere above the Earth. Astral travel made the trip almost instantaneous. Some people prefer to call this kind of travel out-of-body experience, Abby. I wished I knew more about astronomy when I went outside to look at the stars. I see one right overhead that is awfully bright. It's twinkling and I know that planets have a steady light. But it stopped as soon as I thought about the twinkling. HMM? I wondered if that is the mothership itself. It twinkled again almost as if it was saying hello. I wondered if I should try to make another visit. There was a slow off and on of the light. That can't really be a twinkle, that's a signal. Hi fellas. And it blinked in reply. There was no doubt about it now. I practically danced as I went inside my apartment. As soon as I could, I settled myself on my bed. I put my hands and feet in the comfortable position for astral travel or going out of the body. Quiet the outer mind, think about letting go and going up, up, even up above the Earth's atmosphere. I giggled a little bit, thinking I wouldn't even need a bulky astronaut suit. Easy does it. Don't lose it. Keep calm. A soft bump and I was in that control room of the mothership again. I remembered the man who was seated at the curved control panel. He was slender and tall with medium brown hair. He wore the same silvery jumpsuit as before. He turned and smiled. Welcome back, Kartreia. Did you see our lights flashing? I gulped. Telepathy even seems to work at quite a distance. I'm learning to respond to Kartreia, even though it isn't my Earth name but their name for me on Mothership. Of course, telepathy works anywhere you want it to work. Do you want to come over and see what Terra looks like from here? The screen above the control panel was black. I moved a step closer, then shook my head. I wasn't ready to look back on planet Earth that I had so recently departed. That's all right. You don't have to. Why don't you take some time to explore the mothership a bit? You can get your bearings that way. He was sympathetic. I just looked at him, not quite believing I would be free to do so. He said, your friend, Jaimini, isn't here to show you off. But that's all right. You can explore the mothership without him leading you all about. I had almost collided with Jaimini on my first trip to the mothership. He had taken me on a whirlwind tour that had ended at the commander's door. Why don't you come with me? We can take it slow and easy. A woman appeared who had a friendly smile. She was the same person whose silver costume I had admired so much on my first trip to the mothership. She wore the same garb, the close-fitting silvery gray jumpsuit with a full skirt over it. I nodded my thanks. Yes, I'd like that. I followed her and we went down a long hallway with many doors on either side. At the end was a glass door where there was lots of light. She opened the door and we stepped out onto a wide avenue. There were buildings of a great and beautiful city. No building was more than 2 or 3 stories high. The air had the vitality of a bright spring day. We strolled leisurely along a broad avenue. There were groups of good-looking people who appeared to be tall tan Scandinavians. Many of them were blonde with long hair. They nodded and smiled at us as we passed. We are mostly Pleiadians here on the mothership. There are others from other star systems that come and go on different assignments. I've lived here for quite some time now. Most of us consider this a permanent assignment. Then it hit me. There aren't any automobiles. That means no pollution. My guide was amused, but she was appreciative of the fact that I had noticed. What would we do with them anyhow? We can go almost any place we want just by thinking about it. We decide to go someplace and we are there. Your automobiles put an awful lot of pollution into the air of Earth from what we see from up here. Isn't our air wonderful? I had to agree that the air was exhilarating. I saw that we had covered quite a distance just by thinking about it. It wasn't tiring walking at all. It was more like floating from place to place. Here, let's go down this elevator to some of our manufacturing areas. You might like to see where our work uniforms are made. Yes, I'd like to see that. I enjoy sewing, and tailoring, as well. The elevator was open air with fingery walls in a style popular in the 1920s, and it was as quiet as could be. We stepped out into a well-lighted room where perhaps 20 people were working at sewing machines. They were much like the sergers that are used on Earth for knit fabrics. They had multiple spools of thread arrayed behind the machines. The workers were mostly women. They nodded at me and kept at their work. There was a pleasant hum of conversation. The silvery gray material was being sewn into jumpsuits. It was resilient but quite soft. They were making the tunics to be worn over them as well, with ties at the sides. The tunics would lie flat when not being worn. I admired the practicality of them. They should be easy to keep clean, I said. Contamination by dirt, or by our bodies, is kept to a minimum here. You could almost say it doesn't exist, because the air system is constantly being cleaned, she explained. The tour continued through other amazing facilities. It was a delightful tour and I thanked her for her time. By the time I had made a number of nighttime visits to the mothership, I was allowed to wander about at will. One night I found myself in a lobby. It looked for all the world like a hospital. I couldn't imagine sickness on this beautiful clean white mothership, but then again I was curious. There were people in white coats going back and forth. I followed one person going into a room who was carefully carrying a gray box. He put it on a long table with a row of other gray boxes about a foot high. I peeked inside the first one. There was a small gray mass about the size of a softball that quivered as if in fear. Believe it or not, those are hearts, I heard telepathically. They have been badly damaged by what they have experienced in war or in physical abuse down on Earth. They have endured so much that they are shrunken and withdrawn. We've brought them here to begin their healing process. Hearts? But where are their bodies? I asked, unbelieving. On, their bodies are being maintained elsewhere until their hearts can be healed. On, dear, the poor things really are hurt, I thought. They look like there is hardly any life at all left in them. I wonder if the Reiki training I have just taken down in Earth space could help them. Go ahead and see what you can do, I heard. All right, I'll try. I raised my hands and gently cradled the energy coming from the palms of my hands and focused it onto the hearts. The gray color within the heart began to lighten, and then it turned to pink, then even brighter pink. The heart began to pulsate more strongly. I was sure it was more with pride than fear. It looked healthy now. Over here, try this one, I heard. I moved on to the next box. In this one, the heart was hardly moving. It was almost black. It was all curled up, almost as if it was hiding. On, the poor thing. Using the power of thought, I sent waves of compassion to it. I moved my hands forward carefully, using the Reiki energy to bathe the heart in healing energy. Ever so slowly, ever so carefully, never touching the heart itself. I heard a tiny sigh as it unfurled itself and the black turned to gray with shadings of pink. The more compassion I sent to it and the more Reiki energy that it absorbed, the lighter it became. It finally ended up a bright pink, the color of love and compassion. It was beautiful. She did it. I heard someone breathing behind me. They asked me to move on to yet another heart. I was excited with my success. The Reiki energy was fully operational now, freely flowing, and the heart changed from gray to pink in what seemed like record time. I moved on to the next one. I really didn't know what was happening, only that it worked. In a very short time I had brought up 11 hearts from black or gray to pink without a failure. It was wonderful. This time though, I wanted to pay closer attention when I worked on this next heart. I cradled the Reiki energy around a heart that was dark gray. It began to turn to a lighter gray. I stopped the flow of Reiki energy. The heart remained the same color. I resumed the Reiki energy very slowly and the heart continued to lighten but slowly. Just try a little harder. I'm sure you can do it. I heard a soft voice at my left elbow. I turned around to see who it was. There was a small figure standing there, with a long white jacket on. He was a little over 4 feet tall. His head seemed large for his body, and his eyes were very large, luminous and dark. He had dark hair that was closely cropped. I froze. I knew it had to be one of the greys, one of the Zeta Reticuli that I had heard so much about. The next moment I had flipped out and was back in my bed on Earth. It was quite a shock to my system to come back so quickly. I had trouble moving my body for a moment. Fear had sent me in a tailspin tumbling back into my physical body. I was ashamed that 2 times in a row I had flipped out of astral travel on the mothership. It was made even more uncomfortable because I had landed so suddenly back in my physical body. I knew I had brought it on myself with simple fear. Much later I learned that the little being was the ship's doctor on board the mothership. He had been there a long time and was known and respected by all on board. My reaction when I saw him had made him very sad. He was actually a very sensitive soul and it hurt him to know that his very appearance could strike terror into the heart of an Earth human. It hurt him to know that others, also known as Greys, were abducting humans and inflicting pain and terror on them for medical purposes of their own and that because of this, many humans were terrified when they saw him. I've never hurt anybody from Earth. I've always helped them. He had turned away with tears in his eyes. It always seems to happen when humans from Earth first see me. I felt very sorry that I had been the reason for his sadness. Chapter 3. The Little Doctor. From where I stood on board the Pleiadian mothership, looking out at my beautiful Earth, it was hard to imagine that there was mayhem, Ervok, occurring in pockets on the Earth. However, the casualties of both the big and little wars on Earth regularly appeared in the healing center of the mothership. It was with sorrow that I saw these casualties of war when I visited the mothership during my astral travel, or during what some would call sleep time. I had flipped out when I first saw the little doctor whom I had thought was a gray, from the Zeta Reticuli star system. Because of my sudden fear then, I had ended up back in my bed on Earth with quite a jolt. I had been disoriented for a while. When Aurora had told me of his reaction I felt quite ashamed. On later visits up to the mothership of the Pleiadians I was determined to meet the little doctor and try to make amends. Nothing on the mothership had harmed me in any way. Truly, there was no reason to be afraid. The little doctor was standing in the lobby of the healing center when I arrived. He was about 4.5 feet tall. He wore a full-length white coat and stood silently looking at me with great sadness and dignity. I want to apologize for my precipitous departure the other night after the healing of hearts, I ventured. He brightened a little and, I continued, those of us on Earth shouldn't believe everything that we hear. I guess sometimes it is just bad propaganda. I wanted to tell you that I would really like to work in the healing center, if you will give me permission. It is such an interesting place. His smile was as wide as his small mouth would allow and his great dark eyes were warm with welcome. I noticed that he had a heart-shaped face. He was really quite nice looking. He looked to be about 40 years old. That was not at all what I had been led to believe about Azita. The tall Pleiadians stood nearby watching to see what would happen. Certainly, we are glad to have you help if you wish, Kartriya. Most other visitors from Earth have preferred just being tourists when they come aboard. He had seemed surprised that I wanted to see more of the healing center. I was starting to get used to the name Kartriya on the mothership. I followed him into what appeared to be an operating room. There was someone with a bad chest wound lying on the table. Someone reached up on a shelf and took down a set of what looked like 4x6 gray cards. They unfolded them and formed them into a circle. Then they slowly lowered them into the body of the individual on the table. The individual sighed and showed signs of regaining consciousness. "What is that gadget?" I asked in awe.